Good morning, everybody. I'd like to thank the conference organizers for giving me the chance to talk about shigellosis in front of this audience, and thank all of you for your attention. Shigellosis is a diarrheal disease caused by four species of Shigella bacteria, and Shigella thonii and Shigella flexneri are the most common in the industrialized world. The U.S. shigellosis burden is about 500,000 cases per year, which makes it the third most common enteric bacterial infection here. Illness is characterized by diarrhea, abdominal pain or cramping, tenesmus, and sometimes fever or blood. Symptoms can last up to about a week, and estimates are that about 20% of patients are hospitalized. Complications are rare, usually less than about 5%, but can include bloodstream infection and post-infectious arthritis. Treatment is rarely necessary because shigellosis is usually self-limited, but antibiotics are widely used to treat shigellosis because they can slightly shorten the duration of illness. However, antibiotic resistance is increasing globally. Cipro, azithromycin, and ceftriaxone are currently the recommended drugs. A transmission occurs through fecal-oral exposure, and infection can occur after ingesting a very small infectious dose. I'm showing a table here to give you a little more context about the infectious doses of several other important enteric pathogens, and you can see that Shigella's infectious dose is orders of magnitude smaller than that for Salmonella and is in the same range as that for norovirus, which of course has really important implications for transmission. A typical shigellosis outbreak might involve multiple modes of transmission, foodborne, person-to-person, maybe a little waterborne transmission thrown in there because it is so highly infectious. And we saw a very dramatic example of this over the last year when we followed one single strain. It was one pulse field cluster. Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay. Great. So this is one example of a cluster we followed last year that began with a few cases in the southeast and then very rapidly spread across the entire country. And when we stopped following it, it had caused 1,600 confirmed cases. Now, this outbreak started in childcare, which is a fairly frequent occurrence with shigellosis outbreaks. In this graph of U.S. shigellosis demographics from recent years, toddlers, shown here, bear a particular burden because they're ambulatory, they're diapered, they aren't great hand washers, and they're still putting lots of things in their mouths. So they're particularly good at both getting and transmitting shigellosis. And we see a second peak here, but just among women in their 20s and early 30s. And we presume that these women are the primary diaper changers. They're either the mothers or the professional child caregivers who are getting shigellosis from the toddlers that they tend. Now, this graph shows the demographics of all U.S. shigellosis cases, but we see something really different when we look at just Shigella flexneri in this graph. Again, we see a large peak in toddlers and preschoolers and then a small peak in women. However, we have this really pronounced peak among young and middle-aged men, with the burden far, far exceeding that in women, and it's up to like four times that of women in some of the age brackets. When we step back and look at just the data again for Shigella flexneri over a longer time period, we see something that looks even more striking to me. We have this really dramatic decline in burden among children, shown in this white line, over the past few decades. And then the burden in women, shown in pink, has also been decreasing slightly more subtly. But when we add in the data for men, we see that the burden has exceeded that in women since the 1970s. And has been increasing rapidly in the last decade. This increase is so great that the burden in men is now twice that in women, and twice that in children, and about three times that in women, which is really remarkable when you look at where we started in 1970. But why is this? Who are these men? Why are they getting shigellosis? Although the demographic data that I just showed you suggest that MSM transmission might be playing a role, we really can't say for certain because our national enteric disease surveillance systems don't capture sexual practices and transmission data for shigellosis or other bacterial enteric infections. But there are hints that this could be what's happening. And I'm going to try to piece together little bits of data to make the case that shigellosis is becoming an increasing problem as an STD among MSM. These hints date back to the early 1970s when an MSM-associated shigellosis outbreak was first reported in San Francisco. And during this outbreak, most patients were young MSM and oral sex was frequently reported. In the decade that followed, several additional MSM-associated shigellosis outbreaks were reported. And by 1985, San Francisco health officials reported that 66% of shigellosis cases in their area were occurring among MSM. Shortly thereafter, CDC issued a surveillance summary that documented an increase in Shigella flexneri infections among men. And here's some more recent evidence. Things got quiet for a while, with essentially no MSM-associated shigellosis outbreaks reported from the mid-1980s through the mid-1990s. And this coincided, of course, with the AIDS era. It might be this might be related to changes in sexual practices at that time, or maybe just changes in surveillance and research priorities. Can't say for sure. But in the late 1990s, the male-to-female ratio among shigellosis cases increased from 1 to a whopping 18 here in Atlanta, which echoed increases in male-to-female ratios for other STDs here in the city. Around the same time, a shigellosis outbreak was reported among MSM in Quebec, and shortly thereafter, MSM clusters were reported in San Francisco, in Australia, and then in Berlin, Canada, Chicago, London through the early 2000s. And then England reported what they called an intensified epidemic among MSM there, which has lasted a decade and is still going strong. Other countries reported similar themes among MSM. Rapid increase in the proportion of MSM cases in Vancouver, Berlin, Australia, and then the literature really exploded with reports of outbreaks among MSM all over the world. In several of these reports, investigators tried to assess shigellosis risk factors. And rather than, for example, food sources being implicated at social events where MSM were congregating, it was sexual behaviors that have been repeatedly implicated. These behaviors are similar to those for more traditional STDs, including having many partners, attending sex parties, using apps to meet partners, which in turn is linked to unprotected anal intercourse. And additionally, rare condom use and sexualized drug use have been associated with shigellosis among MSM. And as we might expect, given these findings, many MSM with shigellosis were found to have other recent or concurrent STDs. However, because of the way shigellosis is transmitted, there are several other sexual behaviors that appear to be risk factors. Oral anal contact, fisting, and scat play are, all increase the possibility of fecal-oral exposure and therefore the risk of shigellosis. We're unsure at this time whether HIV is itself a risk factor for shigellosis, but several studies have found a high prevalence of HIV among MSM with shigellosis. We're not sure if it's actually easier to acquire among people with HIV, whether those with HIV shed Shigella longer in the stool and therefore they're more likely to transmit it to other people with HIV if they're serosorting, or whether HIV is a marker for some of the other higher risk sexual activities that are also a risk factor for Shigella transmission. We're also unsure whether recent antibiotic exposure is a particular risk factor among MSM. And I've cited just one study here, but there are several published and unpublished reports that have found very high rates of antibiotic exposure among MSM with shigellosis, and particularly exposure to antibiotics to which the Shigella strain is resistant. So given all of this, I feel pretty confident that the large shigellosis peak that we see in this graph that I showed you earlier and the uptick in men in this graph is due to transmission among MSM and that the burden of shigellosis among MSM is increasing. But why should we care about diarrhea when there are so many, when there are so many other more dangerous health issues that affect MSM, and we see headlines like this far too often. While shigellosis isn't as lethal or as likely to cause chronic complications as many of these other STDs, there are still reasons to be concerned. And as I mentioned earlier, shigellosis typically causes diarrhea that might be bloody, and there might be up to 20% of people hospitalized. But it's among MSM, shigellosis severity might be even higher. We're working on an analysis of national data right now that shows that younger men are more likely to be hospitalized, have shigella bacteremia, or die from shigellosis compared to older men or women of any age. There are some case reports of very severe shigellosis among MSM with HIV, including a report of fulminant shigellosis that required a colectomy. However, some other reports have not found an increase in shigellosis severity among MSM with HIV if the CD4 count is high. And many might dismiss shigellosis as just a little diarrhea, but one MSM shigellosis patient had this to say about his illness. Getting shigella was the lowest point in my life. I suffered uncontrollable bloody diarrhea with severe stomach cramps, and the severity of the symptoms and the dehydration headaches made me think I was going to die. Data are limited right now, but treatment failure might also be more common among MSM. Treatment failure was documented in an HIV-positive MSM who was infected with an azithromycin-resistant strain, and mounting evidence suggests that drug-resistant shigellosis is more common among MSM. Now, the association between MSM and drug-resistant shigella has been difficult to assess systematically, again, because we lack the epidemiologic data about sexual practices in our surveillance systems, and also because many isolates are not tested for drug susceptibility. Nonetheless, existing data suggests that this association exists. So in 2015, the Sanger Institute published a really elegant paper in which they documented through whole genome sequencing of about 300 shigella isolates collected from many different countries over a couple of decades, global dissemination of one single strain of azithromycin-resistant shigella. New York City health officials looked at shigella isolates from 2006 to 2009, and these weren't tested for azithromycin susceptibility, but using their standard test panel at the time, MSM-linked strains were 6 times more likely to be resistant to drugs that had been used clinically for shigellosis until rates of resistance became too high. This month, my group published an analysis of all shigellosis clusters and outbreaks reported to CDC during the previous 5 years, and we found that MSM-linked clusters were associated with resistance to the 3 drugs currently recommended for shigellosis treatment. Australian officials looked at shigella isolates from 2013 to 2014 and found similar associations with very high proportions of isolates resistant to azithromycin and ciprofloxacin, and these rates were twice as high as for isolates obtained from other non-MSM patients. And some breaking news from New York City. New York City health officials 2 weeks ago released a health alert describing a huge increase in the percent of shigella isolates resistant to azithromycin there. And as you can see in the table, the proportion increased from 13% to 30% since 2013. And moreover, 85% of the patients with the resistant isolates were MSM. Now, these findings are corroborated by a number of outbreak reports of azithromycin and ciprofloxacin-resistant shigellosis in MSM in the recent few years. So there appears to be a high burden of antimicrobial-resistant shigella among MSM, which, of course, impacts treatment and outcomes. So the last point I wanted to make about why we should care about shigellosis among MSM is transmissibility. And many STDs are, if I can be so bold at this conference, kind of hard to transmit. So one case of syphilis might lead to a smallish syphilis outbreak among that person's sexual contacts and onward. But a single case of shigellosis among MSM, I've over-dramatized this a little bit, can lead to something more like this, with many, many modes of transmission, across a wide geographic area, leading to hundreds and potentially thousands of cases. And if this scenario involves a highly drug-resistant strain, as we've tended to see with MSM-associated Shigella strains, we could see large numbers of severe illness and treatment failures. So for all of these reasons, primary prevention is key. However, no interventions to prevent sexual transmission of shigellosis have been carefully evaluated. Many behavioral changes are likely required, and these are behavioral changes that are sure to be unpopular, such as avoiding sex during diarrhea because it's just so contagious, but also while shedding, once they're convalescent, Shigella can be shed for anywhere from a few days to weeks after illness resolves. And so CDC has, we just picked a number that we thought might be acceptable, 2 weeks. but we're not sure that this is actually the optimal number. Minimizing fecal-oral exposures during sex by what will surely be viewed as very prudish recommendations to wash hands, genitals, anus, before and after sex, and to use barriers not just during anal sex, but also during oral sex, rimming and fisting, plus the standard shigellosis guidance to wash hands after using the toilet and before preparing food. So to summarize, sexual transmission of shigellosis is an emerging issue for MSM, but many data gaps exist. The burden among MSM is difficult to quantify using our existing data sources, but it's likely large and increasing rapidly. Risk factors include both traditional and enteric disease-specific STD risk factors, and severe shigellosis might be more common among MSM, with antimicrobial resistance more prevalent among Shigella bacteria isolated from MSM. So we have several challenges as we try to address shigellosis among MSM. First, surveillance. Clearly, it'll be useful to adapt our surveillance systems to better capture these issues. Diagnostics for enteric diseases are changing rapidly. Many clinical labs are using culture-independent diagnostic tests, which doesn't leave any isolates for typing or antimicrobial susceptibility testing, which in turn makes cluster detection and clinical management difficult. Compounding that is the challenge of detecting clusters for targeted intervention when sexual networks are diffuse, which seems to be the case with MSM with shigellosis. We need to start asking more questions and the right questions to understand these risk groups and practices. And to do this, we need to link STD and enteric staff within public health. Now, many of us on the enteric side, we can talk about diarrhea for hours. We can find 16 ways to ask about hamburger exposure, but we really get tongue-tied when we're supposed to talk about sex. Clinical testing is likely to continue to veer towards culture-independent testing and away from culture-based methods that can better guide clinical management. And, of course, this is especially important to get isolates and antimicrobial resistance testing given the high rates of resistance in this population. And clinicians might not be aware of or motivated to counsel, aware of the need to and motivated to counsel MSM about prevention of sexual transmission of shigellosis. There's one study in which nearly all MSM with shigellosis had been told by their primary care providers that they had a foodborne infection, for example. Antimicrobial resistance is likely to lead to problems among MSM with shigellosis. If MSMR, as our early data show, the population with both the highest rates of antimicrobial resistant shigellosis and at the greatest risk for severe shigellosis that requires treatment. Prevention measures are technically straightforward, but attaining high rates of compliance will likely be difficult. So as we just discussed, several behavioral changes are necessary going beyond condom use to include the even more challenging hygiene and abstinence recommendations. And we must also battle the perception that shigellosis is just a little diarrhea. And then there's transmissibility, which can be overwhelmingly rapid and widespread. These challenges, however, also present opportunities for improvement. We can enhance surveillance systems a number of ways, and indeed we've started working on this at the national level, as have many, many state and local health departments. We can begin to routinely collect sexual practice information on enteric disease questionnaires, expand our reporting requirements to include cases diagnosed through PCR-based tests, which the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists approved last June, Ramp up testing for antimicrobial resistance, which we're hopeful will be facilitated by the President's antimicrobial resistance budget. And even start to consider partner notification and testing for shigellosis. We can build and strengthen partnerships between STD and enteric disease units within public health departments, and between public health and LGBT advocates and MSM, which STD units have done nicely, but we in enterics are just beginning to try to do. And we can increase awareness among clinicians and MSM about these issues, including shigellosis risk factors, testing, management, and prevention, which is exactly what a number of really creative and proactive health departments have started doing. These are some examples of really terrific ads for dating apps and flyers and posters that have been created by different health departments. And I hope that more of us can do the same, and together we can better understand and work to reduce the burden of shigellosis among MSM.
Is it easy to treat?
If it's susceptible, it's not hard to treat. So I'd like to thank many people who've been working hard on shigellosis as an STD, and thank you for your attention. If you'd like... and if you'd like to hear a little bit more about shigellosis, my colleague Jackie Hurd is talking tomorrow at 10:15 in Salon D.
Thank you, Dr. Bowen, for a great talk. And we're open for questions. And please come to the mic and introduce yourself before the question. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Sonali Kulkarni. I'm with Los Angeles County Department of Public Health. And as you may know, we are currently having a cluster of cases amongst MSM with Shigella, which we've had before. But what we've noticed recently, we just started matching it with our HIV surveillance data, and we're seeing that upwards of 70% of the cases are actually amongst HIV positive. This is very preliminary. And we're seeing that they largely have lower CD4 counts. And so I just wondered if you could comment on that association a little bit more, what's known about that, because what we, from the HIV and STD side, we've been working with our folks who work on enteric diseases, and what we've said is we think, based on what we know, the best prevention intervention we can offer to them is actually linking them back into HIV medical care, so their CD4 count can go higher, but I don't know if there's really literature to support that there's an association with their CD4 count. So.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and unfortunately the data are pretty thin right now. It does... there are hints that lower CD4 counts are associated with perhaps lower infectious dose, easier to acquire, and longer shedding, which, again, if they're asymptomatic, they return to having sex with partners, and they're continuing to shed for prolonged periods, and they're serosorting as well, then that sort of all ties together.
And I just wanted to thank you for mentioning the need to collaborate with the partners within your own department on these issues. It can be really tough to figure out whose turf this lies in and how to work together, and it's like a moving target all the time. But so thanks for mentioning that.
Thanks. Wonderful analysis, and another sense of deja vu. For those of us who were around when Selma Dritz made her report in the mid-1970s in San Francisco, and the term gay bowel syndrome became de rigueur from that report, and at that, I can't remember if her paper used that term, but that's when the term became common, and we're back in it. All of the STI experiences of the 1970s and 80s, for those of you who are not mature enough to have observed it personally at that time, you're now in the position of seeing what some of us in the field in those early days were experiencing. And it's very frustrating to all of us. My question is, on this realm, and given the broader, obviously we no longer think of a single syndrome, of course, but have you looked at CDC data for other enteric infections, salmonellosis, Campylobacter, amebiasis, et cetera?
Yeah, no, that's a terrific question, and I suspect, as you apparently also do, that there is sexual transmission of many other enteric pathogens, and we're just not finding them because none of us are looking.
And hepatitis A, I put in the mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. We're starting, we just started working on a systematic review of enteric outbreaks of sexually transmitted enteric diseases, and we're trying to develop a module of questions about sexual practices that we can stick into our enteric disease questionnaires.
The other thing I'll add is your very insightful slide about the fact that this is a group of diseases that, unlike HIV, the bridging phenomenon into non-MSM populations is a very high risk and undoubtedly will happen. It is common folklore, and there's probably a certain amount of truth to the frequency, for example, with which MSM work in food management industries, wait services, kitchen services, and that sort of thing. So the potential is high, and I think it's only a matter of time before we see hepatitis A, shigellosis, or other outbreaks occurring through restaurants, for example, because of an infected gay man. And so those of us who deal with these populations should be prepared for the blowback and the public relations issues that will be on the table if and when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, it's hard to piece together given how our data are collected, but we did... About a year ago, there was an outbreak, a large outbreak in Northern California at a restaurant, and the strain was one we were following among MSM at the time, so we suspect it was an MSM food handler.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.